Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
Hello. From the studios of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Byron Scott, your host for this week's discussion of world news events by professionals whose job it is to report the facts and analyze the consequences. Since the early 17th century, when the first broadsheets hit the streets, everyone cheerfully paid for their newspapers and magazines. Then came the internet. Now one of the thorniest questions in publishing is whether the public will pay for getting many familiar periodicals online. Today, so-called paywalls are going up around access to newspapers and magazines that recent generations of online readers have regarded as free on the World Wide Web. The New York Times, Britain's Guardian, The Economist, Financial Times are being joined in pay-to-read experiments by hundreds of less familiar titles worldwide. Here to discuss paywalls, a very important question for readers, how and if they work, are with me three experts. With me here in the studio, my colleague, Mike Jenner, holder of the Houston Hart Chair in Journalism, who focuses on innovations in our industry. Mike, welcome to the
Thank
show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Good. And on the line from Bratislava, Slovakia, Matus Kostolny, editor-in-chief of his nation's leading paper, SME, and of SME.sk, an innovative for-pay news website with 1.5 million readers monthly. Matus, welcome to the show.
Good morning. I'm happy to be with you.
Thank you. And also on the phone, from La Rochelle, France, the deputy editor-in-chief for the magazine of the World Association of Newspapers and Newspaper Publishers, Valerie Arnault. Valerie, we're happy that you are with us.
Hello, I'm happy to join as well.
Good. Well, let's get started. Mike, I'll start with you. After years without paywalls, why now? Why are these paywalls necessary?
Well, I should point out, since I'm the one panelist here that's from the States, that these paid content models online are not revolutionary in other countries. But here in the United States, as you mentioned earlier, most newspapers went online and just put all their content up for free back in the 90s. And it that now is being viewed by many as that's what's being called the original sin, publishers are realizing that they've trained consumers online to expect the content is going to be free, and it's really only been, I think, in the last couple of years we've seen a major shift of quite a few newspapers moving to set up paid content systems, and I think that's driven primarily by two factors. One is the fortunes of newspapers have plummeted financially in the last 4 years. Really, we've seen revenues halved over the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that is, I think, really the what has pushed publishers into believing this is a viable solution is they've failed to see significant growth in online advertising. There was always a belief that if you build it, they will come, that at some point the revenues would kind of join in the, just as readership online of news articles was rising, that revenues from advertising online would rise as well. And that has not happened in the United States, and I think the publishers are frustrated with that, and they see this as a way to make more money.
Mm-hmm. Valerie, give us the worldwide perspective. Mike mentioned that that these paywall experiments really started elsewhere.
Yes, I think, well, you have to consider that Europe is very, there are a lot of different markets, but I would say that in general, the most big national dailies were more heading for traffic. If you consider, you know, 2 years ago, they were more, you know, trying to get advertising. The business papers, like in the U.S., they had already a paid wall or paid content strategy. And I would say that the situation is different for the regional newspapers, who would try to keep a balance between local paid content and what they were giving for free to the readers. Mm-hmm. But that, again, varies from a country to another country. Like, for example, in the UK market, where you have the BBC competition, and, you know, the BBC is very good with their news site, and a lot of regional newspapers just saw that it would be too dangerous for them to offer their content to have their content paid for because of the BBC competition that was for free.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you, I would say that in this landscape, 2 years ago, even the national dailies started to seriously start searching for paid content strategy, and it was, of course, because of the economical crisis in 2009, and they saw that they couldn't rely only on one pillar, which was advertising.
Right.
So let's
bore down from this to really a national experiment in Slovakia. Matus Kostoni, tell us about SME.sk, and it seems that what you're working towards is a paywall for your nation's entire publishing industry.
Not really. I'm editor-in-chief of the SME.sk, or the SME newspaper, and we are part of the national paywall system, which is started in June or May this year. It's called Piano, and there are 9 publishing houses which got together under the same umbrella of Piano, and we use the same paywall system for content in Slovakia. And SME is the biggest news website in the country. We have, as you mentioned already, 1.5 million people visiting the website every month. And the country is, from your point of view, it's a small market. It's 5.5 million people living in Slovakia. So it means we are a really big website or big newspaper in the country, and we're only part of the Piano system. And the system works it's more or less the same system as cable television. So you have one provider who gets more or less combines the 9 publishing houses, which have more than 40 newspapers and weeklies and magazines and their websites. And if you pay for the content, you pay like €2.90. It's like more or less $4, and then you can use it for the whole month, and you don't have to pay for every website. You can use it more. You will use more or less the Slovak internet, and you get the content there.
Mike, how does that sound to you?
Well, I think that sounds like a great approach, and in fact, there's been a lot of talk in the States about some sort of a syndicated approach to charging for content. The problem is that we've got here 1,400 daily newspapers, many of them in different ownership situations, different platforms, different systems, very scattered. But I think most important, perhaps, is the fact that we've really kind of not set the expectations of consumers here with the notion that the content has intrinsic value. So I think that what we're seeing here in this kind of move to paid content systems on a lot of individual newspapers and individual groups is going to perhaps set the table for, or maybe set expectations on the part of consumers. And I think that there are several discussions or efforts to bring about a syndicated approach to charging so that a consumer could pay one price and have access to multiple titles. I think we're a ways away from that, and that really hasn't. There are issues of price fixing and collusion that have to be carefully handled here in the States. But I think that someday we'll see that emerge. But or it may emerge. It'll certainly be attempted. I think right now it's really just sort of every publisher for himself, and
which is the traditional.
It's traditional, approach. Yes. We've got a long history there, but I think we are setting expectations, or maybe resetting the standards.
Well, as the unofficial representative of the reader here, I certainly would like to do something as the online people do in Slovakia, which is just put in one password. Mm-hmm. And one address instead of four or five every time I sit down to read. Valerie, I interrupted you a moment ago. What kinds of paywall approaches appear to be working best from Juan Ifra's point of view?
We have the freemium and the metered model, and I would say that the freemium, it seems to be working more than the metered model is starting. Yeah, like you have Le Temps in a Swiss, which is a quality newspaper that has started quite successfully. A strategy of a metered model. But if you see that most big newspapers like, Le Monde or Aftonbladet in Sweden, they have they're more trying to have like a paid area that would be, premium for the user, and that they try to have people subscribe to this part. Aftonbladet is a very good example because it's one of the most trafficked websites. I think it reached 4 million unique visitors a week, which is, for a population of 9 million inhabitants in Sweden, it's huge. And they started in 2004 this plus area. And, I've more than 100,000 subscribers to this place, to this paid Aftonbladet Plus. So I think it's they're very successful at trying to combine, a free website that is attracting a lot of people, a lot of advertising, and building on top a revenue with paid subscription, and that now represents something like 20% of their revenue.
Excellent. Valerie, I need to interrupt you just one more time here, and we'll come right back to you. Before we continue this discussion, I want to remind our audience that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You'll also be interested in the articles, interviews, and other features that are part of that website. You also can send us questions or comments, care of Global Journalist Program at gmail.com, or simply look us up on Facebook. Now, back to you, Valerie. Please, you were talking about the patterns of success.
I was mentioning this example of Aftonbladet Plus in Sweden, which is probably one of the most successful newspapers in Europe in this area. Now, you have, I think, the only newspaper that has a very radical approach, like, you have to pay, otherwise you don't get any content, is the Times in London. And it seems from their first results that they've been quite successful in doing that. Because I don't know if you've read about the results, but I think they have something like 100,000 people that pay for one of the digital versions. It could be on mobile or it could be on the website.
What I wanted to add is
besides this just paid content strategies that some newspapers are trying now, I think this what's going to be important in the future is that readers will access those content in multiple platforms, mostly using mobile devices and all that. And there's a good window here to start to implement this idea of paying, because you deliver an additional service by allowing your reader to be on to access unique content on mobile, on tablet.
Right. That leads actually to the next question that I wanted to ask, which is I think we tend to think of these paywall approaches as being confined to sitting at our computer in our office in our home, but Mike, you're actually what Valerie is saying that mobiles and or what we call here cell phones are and other devices can iPads and such are also what we can look at.
I think that Valerie's exactly right. The approach that we see emerging, or the grand vision is to be to offer sort of a 360 degree anywhere, any platform approach, so that consumers can access a publication's content through their phones or tablets or on their computer. And so we're seeing, in addition to the kind of a move to a paid content approach on the website, we also, I think, see, we've seen that 62% of the newspapers, the larger newspapers, those over 25,000 circulation, have developed or introduced mobile phone apps or mobile optimized websites. And of those who don't, I think 60% of the rest plan to do so in the next year. So here in the States, there's also been a lot of movement in that direction. And I think that's, as Valerie says, that's a way that sort of to justify the payment approach, and also, I think, offer greater convenience to the consumer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think, you see this psychological barrier of having people pay more for this content. Once you go on mobile devices, on smartphones or tablets, you're kind of adding value to the service. You're adding the convenience. And that, I think that help readers understand why you're charging more. There's another thing I wanted to say is that there's in most newspapers tend to charge, when you're a print subscriber, you get a free access to the website and for the same price. And I can see a lot of publishers changing that now, and I see that at Axel Springer in Germany, for example, that's what they do with their regional newspaper, where they say, okay, you get the website, but the website is different. It has some unique value. So once you subscribe to the newspaper, you can get access for the website, but we're going to increase the price.
Mm-hmm. And let me get Matus back in here. I think Matus, what has Piano learned from some of these examples we've been talking about, or maybe others that you could mention?
I mean, we exactly do what Valerie was mentioning, and it's a combined system, because on one hand we charge money from our readers only for special content we have, so the website as itself is for free. But if you want to read our opinions or our unique materials, our own stories, the best stories from the newspaper, then you have to be in Piano, then you have to pay for it. If you want to discuss under the articles, more than if you want to post more than three discussion postings, then you have to be in Piano. So it means that we are trying not to lose our readers because we love them. We love our readers that are reading us online. But we want to learn people that if they want to read us online and if they want to read unique content and really the best journalism, then they have to pay for it because it costs money to do it. And so it means that average reader doesn't have to pay. A special reader who is like really interested in journalism and in public affairs, what's going on around him, then he has to pay $2.90 and it's not so much and he has to do it. In September, we started to offer a special application for tablets for our newspaper, and it's also part of the Piano system. So if you are part of the Piano system, then you can read in the newspaper on tablets, Kindle, or all the other applications. And it's very successful from our point of view because it increases the number of people who are on Piano system, and it brings money to us.
I love the metaphor of the piano. I can see publishers playing heart and soul with each other. Mike, let me get back to you. Does there seem to be an advantage for prestige newspapers and magazines in a paywall system over perhaps a mass circulation tabloid?
Well, I think that the belief has always been that the kind of the conventional wisdom has always been that you really had to have a niche or a really, really strong brand to do this. I think that that has proven to be not quite a rigid rule, and I think a lot of local newspapers have said now, okay, well, local is our niche, and we're going to go ahead and do that. So we've seen that kind of dispersed and diffused down into various levels. I think that if you have a strong brand, you are, you know, and a unique selection of content, you have a much better chance of doing well at this. I think actually some newspapers probably, when they cut their staffs and reduced expenses in the last couple of years, they really kind of cut to the bone. And I'm, you know, worry a little bit about how well that'll be accepted with their readers. But I think we've also seen that loyal readers have been, you know, I think they really want to support their newspapers and have been willing to, you know, be forced into some of these digital arrangements. I'm a little concerned about the non-readers and how newspapers and other news organizations need to continue to develop new ways of reaching non-readers, younger readers, potential readers down the road, because what we don't want to see happen is that these paid models or walls become a barrier to adaption. And at some point, that the newspaper industry must wrestle with that.
Right. And Valerie, just quickly, do you see any evidences of resistances from they would rather go to the kiosk as part of their social interactions every day than sit at home and look and watch their cell phones or their iPads?
I'm not sure I'm following you. I understand why you want me to answer.
I got a little too far out in my metaphorical description here.
Because what I wanted to
we're talking about what Mike mentioned, the non
the non reader,
right?
Okay, let me give you an example of to come back to Afton Bladet. Afton Bladet is a mid-sized newspaper, sold solely in newsstands, so no subscription for the print paper. One of the big quality is sport coverage. So, you know, those 5 million of unique visitors a week, they lack the sport coverage, the live sport coverage, and the sport writers. The sport writers start the discussion with the readers on, you know, what a big event that happened. And then if they really want the article or they have to go to the paid wall. They have to actually subscribe and go behind the paywall. So I think it's very much, and I think it's for the future, it's a big thing as well, that the each newspaper brand, they need to define, you know, this this good journalist that they have for, you know, local coverage or sport or whatever, and have them engage with the reader or tease the reader on what they have to say on the website, where it's there's a lot of traffic, or on the tablet or on the mobile smartphone, and try to get them to go behind this paywall and want more.
Okay,
more
Valerie, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you once again, and that has to be the final time, because I'm afraid we've run out of time here. I wanted to remind our audience that there is plenty more information about paywalls around the world on our website, globaljournalist.org. Also, please go to Juan Ifra and the Reynolds Journalism Institute's website for further information. It's early days on these experiments, and as readers, it's important for us to know how they're doing. I want to thank our guests, and also thank our director, Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Our lead producer for this show was Jessica Popovic, assisted by David Cawthon, Camille Mastracci, and Ryan Kress. This is Byron Scott for Global Journalists, reminding you that you can download, view, or listen to this show, plus additional features, by going to globaljournalist.org. Join us next week as journalists open their journals to take us inside their stories. And now stay tuned. Free Press Watch comes along next.
And now, Free Press Watch, a segment on Global Journalist where each week we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Jessica Popovac. A Peruvian TV journalist was gunned down last week. Jose Oquendo Reyes was shot outside of his home in the province of Chincha, south of Lima. According to the International Press Institute, Oquendo Reyes did not receive any death threats leading up to his murder. However, he had reported recently on local corruption. He was the third reporter to be killed in Peru this year. And in China last week, a TV journalist whose high-impact reporting on food safety led to dozens of recent arrests was stabbed several times in his home. His laptop was also stolen. He died the following day. Although local police are saying that robbery was the likely motive behind his murder, press freedom watchdogs are skeptical, as several Chinese reporters working on food safety in recent years have faced harassment and attacks. And in Malaysia, the prime minister last week promised to repeal two restrictive media laws that both allow for indefinite detentions of journalists and mandate an annual permit process for all news media outlets. As the move comes just before elections in Malaysia, free press advocates are watching and waiting to see how this promise will materialize. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at www.globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week on Global Journalist. See you next week.